Children be gone, or would the house be coming to order? Would the members be proving their existence by putting the green button down, please? Has any member failed to push the green? We have St. Vitus something or other on our board here. We'll go for the board on the right. Madam Clerk.
28 members present.
We have a quorum. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative James has been excused from call of house today, and there are no other excused absences.
Record will so reflect. Again, leading the invocation today is the Reverend William Valentine of St. Brendan's Episcopal Church. Would members please rise for the invocation?
The skies have cleared to reveal the splendor of creation which surrounds and delights us. Clear the skies of our purpose and resolve so that we may work together with the knowledge that finishing our work is not a race, but a call from our Creator to be good stewards of such a bountiful gift. The challenge to us by the chances and changes of modern life invited us to look to those who have gone before us as examples towards whom we need to look. May Patrick be such an example of leadership who brought the people of Ireland out of darkness into the clarity of life, of purpose and zeal. Give to our work this day and during this session a sense of vision which will set our hearts afire for the leadership of the people of this diverse community and the protection and use of the gifts of a place so rich in abundance. Protect those we love and give to each of us peace of mind when the evening calls us to rest. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father. Representative Okutula, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread upon the journal. Thank you.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 57th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Journal, as certified by the Chief Clerk, be approved.
Without objection, certified journal is approved. Are there guests this morning for introduction? Seeing none, are there messages from the Governor?
There are no messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other body.
A message dated March 16th stating the Senate has adopted the Conference Committee report considering CS for House Bill 100 and Senate CS for CS for House Bill 100 finance, thus adopting Conference CS for House Bill 100. And a message dated March 16th stating the Senate has passed CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 11 finance by the Senate Finance Committee urging the Congress of the United States to provide federal education funds as a block grant to the state.
That resolution will be referred to the Health, Education, Social Services Committee and the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the other body.
Are there communications?
We received the Alaska Mental Health Board annual report. I have no further communication.
Reports of standing committees?
State Affairs Committee has considered House Joint Resolution Number 18, Constitutional Amendment Administrative Hearings, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 18, State Affairs, with a new title attaches a fiscal note, recommending do pass James, Coghill, Whitaker, and Ogun, do not pass Smalley and Curtula. The report was signed by James, Chair. House Joint Resolution 18 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The House Special Committee on World Trade and State Federal Relations has considered House Concurrent Resolution Number 2, Sovereignty of the State Resources, attaches a zero fiscal note recommending to do pass Massick, Green, Calgary, Barnes, do not pass Berkowitz and Jewell. The report was signed by Barnes Chair. House Concurrent Resolution Number 2 has a further referral to the Fisheries Committee. The House Special Committee on World Trade and State Federal Relations has considered House Bill 109, Glacier Bay National Park, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 109, World Trade, with the same title, attaches 3-0 fiscal notes, recommending do pass Calgary, Green, Massick, and Barnes, no recommendation Jewell, amend Berkowitz. The report was signed by Barnes Chair. House Bill 109 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Introductions of resolutions or citations.
Citation honoring Pat Porter by Representative Smalley, honoring James Mason, sports official, by Senator Lehman, in memoriam Christina Janice O'Brook by Representative Foster. House Joint Resolution Number 29 by the House Judiciary Committee relating to the division of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
It will be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Are there brief it is? Will the House please come back to order? Are there bills for introduction?
House Bill 140 by Representative Kapsner, entitled An Act Relating to the Kuskokwim Ice Classic.
That will be referred to State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 141 by Representatives Scott, Porter, and Calgary, entitled An Act Providing for Preferential Voting in State and Local Elections.
Will be referred to State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Bring us to the consideration of the data calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's agenda?
House Joint Resolution Number 11 by Representatives Phillips, James, Harris, Whitaker, Smalley, urging the United States Congress to pass legislation to open the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Alaska, to oil and gas exploration, development, and production. The House...
Please. Madam Clerk.
The House Special Committee on Oil and Gas considered the resolution, recommended that it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 11, Oil and Gas, with the same title, attached to zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Whitaker, Ogun, Phillips, Bryce, Smalley, no recommendation Kimplin. The report was signed by Whitaker Chair. The Resources Committee considered the resolution and recommended the original version, recommending do pass Ogun, Sanders, Jewell, Massick, Barnes, Harris, no recommendation Kapsner. The report was signed by Ogun, co-chair. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move asking unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution 11 be adopted.
There's objection. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, whereas I'm supportive of the idea, I think we ought to insist on 90-10, and the committee substitute from oil and gas have the 90-10 version in. And I think that's the version we ought to be voting on here today.
There is any other debate on the adoption of the original version of HJR 11?
Speaker.
Representative
Phillips.
I
would recommend that the body pass the original version of this resolution. In our discussions with Arctic Power and with our congressional delegation, they have asked us to send the resolution in as it is worded in order to for us to get to the first step with Congress in getting ANWR open.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of HJR 11 as originally written. It is and has been the understanding of this body in these resolutions that we've been passing over the last several years that we should not put in the 90-10 split, that we should leave it open, because it is important that we send a positive message, and we know that there is a serious debate going on about the differences that we might be able to obtain, whether it be 90-10 or 80-10 or 80-20 or whatever. So I think that the, and I'm the person that made the motion to adopt the original version and resources, so I would recommend that people vote against, or excuse me, for HGR 11 as originally written.
Is there further discussion on the adoption of the original bill? Representative Ogden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think most people in this room know that I'm an adamant states' rights advocate. I feel very clearly that the 90-10 split was the deal. However, we need to be, I think, adopt an appropriate strategy to get ANWR open, and we can fight the 90-10 issue and maybe another resolution another day. So I'll recommend voting to leave the 90-10 out. Thank you.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the representative from District 27. It is a compact clause sovereignty issue. It is, if you believe that that was a compact, then this is part of the compact. And I don't think it can be left to another day. If we compromise on it, it is effectively gone out of our compact clause discussions, out of the agreement. So you either believe in it or you don't, it seems to me, and this is the appropriate place. This is exactly where it should be. And for my clarification, a yes vote here adopts the original without 90-10, and a no doesn't. Is that right?
Yep, I will explain the vote before we take it. Representative Bundy? Briefities. Will the House please come back to order? Representative Rivendell?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're talking about a resolution, and resolutions indeed are resolutions. In this case, it's a statement of opinion of this House and hopefully the other body and how we feel. I think we should be consistent in the terms how we feel about ANWR. And I think that if we don't include what is in the oil and gas version of the bill, some of the reason they said, well, we can't do that because then it'll cause us some problems, we want to compromise. Well, there are some things we should not compromise on, and that is the compact that was agreement with the state of Alaska and the United States government, and also the idea of sovereignty, state sovereignty. After the fact, resolutions are going to be meaningless unless we are consistent in our argument throughout of what we think the terms should be with the state of Alaska. Now, it's going to come a day where the national government will want to open it, not only the state of Alaska, but the national government. They should know our terms. We should be very upfront with them, because any after-the-fact resolution will have no bearing.
Thank you, Representative Grusendorf. Let me ask for the body's edification and during the break for my own. Technically, we do not have this issue in front of us to debate yet. We are in second reading with HJR 11 in its original version in front of us. What I would ask the indulgence of the body is that the majority leader will remove his motion to adopt that version. We will go to amendments and then have the proper discussion, which this amendment, I think, would bring about. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do withdraw my recommendation for...
Read it. Let's come back to order. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I was most interested in the debate of the former speaker from Sitka, and I am so pleased to know of his undying support for the compact and state sovereignty on this, and I'm sure that all other issues are the same importance. He will take exactly the same position. Mr. Speaker, I wanted to go back and say that simply because we do not address the 90-10 split in here, does not mean that that's not what we support. It's simply silent. Being silent does not mean that you have changed your position whatsoever. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Barnes. Now, let me ask the clerk if we have any amendments on our desk.
We have amendment number one by Representative Curtula to House Joint Resolution 11, beginning page 3, line 7.
Representative Curtula.
Thank you. I move the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
There is an objection to amendment number one, Representative Curtula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker O'Porter. And I think that I'm wearing the right color today for two reasons, although I had only intended to be wearing it for one. If the language that is contained in amendment number one is not in the resolution, there's no understanding that that's what we intend or what we mean. To be clear about what we believe as a state was our rightful return at statehood, I believe that the amendment should be there, and I'd ask for your acceptance of the amendment. Thank you.
Further debate on amendment number one, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This certainly is not the first time this has come up. Each year we seem to have this same sort of a resolution we send back to Washington. They are certainly aware of the state's position. As has been said, there is a compact. The compact does include a 90-10 split. It goes clear back to Swanson River when the state was a fledgling state and we needed resources to be able to pay the bills of statehood. And so the government, in its wisdom, then said, all right, we're going to grant 90-10 split on the reserve that is a federal moose range. Since that time, of course, we've had Cook Inlet, and much to our delight, we've had the development on the North Slope. That has caused some people in Congress to say that, gee whiz, the state of Alaska has enough money, doesn't need this kind of a split, let's go back to a 50-50. But that doesn't mean that the state has ever agreed to that. And so the compact stays, whether or not we say, as has been said here, whether it's 90-10, 80-20, or whatever it might be, we are not saying something new. By staying silent on this, we have not addressed that issue of the split. We're just saying we want it open. And when it's open, then we'll debate. Whether or not you say, federal government, it should be less than 90-10, we'll debate you on that issue. But let's get the thing opened and not get a barb out there that's going to hold back the opening. As we've seen on so many issues, the federal government will, at its own pleasure, decide to change things on us. And we don't want them, by any stretch of the imagination, saying, well, this is a barrier to trying to open it up even just for evaluation purposes. So my strong recommendation would be that we don't address the issue of the 90-10 split, that we just address the issue we want ANWR open.
Thank you, Representative Ogun.
It's, Mr. Speaker, it's O'Ogan today. Actually, if it was O'Gan, it would be Irish, but I'm actually Norwegian. Of course, you can always tell them Norwegian, but you can't tell them much. Mr. Speaker, when we were back in D.C. during the Energy Council, there were literally plane loads, and I mean plane loads, of people. There was a fly-in by national environmental groups, and when I was in the process of absconding one of those buttons from one of those gentlemen in a coercive way, he explained to me that they were down here trying to, in addition to other things, trying to stop drilling in ANWR. Not even drilling, but they were trying to stop the 3D seismic exploration. They don't want to know what's going on up there. And that's why I think that this amendment would possibly hurt those chances, and I'd just like to associate myself with remarks of the Majority Leader that we can deal with that one issue at a time. Thank you.
Representative Ogun. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Maybe it's a day, but there's a lot of Blarney floating around. You know, it's not a question of staying silent on this issue. The Oil and Gas Committee said something. They said 90-10. And then it was taken out. And I think it's a fair interpretation that rejection of this amendment means that we're not pursuing 90-10 with the same vigor that we ought to. Certainly, someone from the other side, so from the federal government, could make that argument. And I would think that what we need to do to insist on 90-10 is go back to the version that oil and gas had, be consistent with our declaration of 90-10, because once we've retreated from a 90-10 declaration, it opens the door to people arguing that that's not what we want.
Again, Representative Isner.
Mr. Speaker, this is now at a different stage in the debate.
It's sounding an awful lot like the previous discussion, but please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, silence, when it is given, is often tacit consent to what is going to happen. And we have certain principles that the majority of this body, for as long as I've been a member of this body, have basically indicated our concern in relation with the conditions of the opening of Anwar. And that was that the compact should be honored. If it is not honored, then what state sovereignty we have does not exist. And I think it's a principle that we should be consistent with. They may ignore it and, you know, and have this argument later, but if we're silent on it, I think that is a mistake.
Further discussion of amendment number one. Seeing and hearing none, the question before the body is, shall amendment number one pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Calling your attention to the board on my right, does any member wish to change his or her vote? Seeing none, Madam Clerk.
15 yeas, 24 nays.
And so amendment number one fails to pass the House. Are there any other amendments on the clerk's desk?
I have no further amendments on my desk.
Ms. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution 11 be considered engrossed and advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third on HJR 11. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
House Joint Resolution Number 11, urging the United States Congress to pass legislation to open the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Alaska, to oil and gas exploration, development, and production.
Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is certainly not a new issue nor a new resolution for this body, but it is very important that we remain ever vigilant and ever putting our best foot forward as far as opening up Anwar. As a representative from Palmer indicated, when we were in Washington, D.C. recently for the Energy Council meeting, there was a huge group of people from all over the states in Washington, D.C. opposing opening Anwar. The delegation from Alaska was led by a very recent former member of this body and the head of the Sierra Club. They were there fighting against Anwar, fighting against jobs for Alaskans, fighting against jobs for America, fighting against the possibility of America being able to reduce the dependency we have on foreign oil coming into this country. At this point in time, 58% of the oil resources of America are imported into America. That's a very, very dangerous statistic for our country. It's dangerous that we allow that to occur. By opening Anwar, we can reduce that dependency on foreign oil. At this point in time, America, the Alaska production, provides about 20% of the American usage. That's down about 5%. With Anwar opened up, we can increase that again and reduce that foreign dependency. The buttons that these people were wearing said, "Save America's Arctic." The former member of this body, having wearing a button that says, "Save America's Arctic," taking the ownership of Anwar away from Alaska and spreading it around the country, and I think that's reprehensible. It is important that we stay vigilant. It is important that Congress knows always where Alaska stands on developing our resources, resources that we have developed in a very, very safe, environmentally safe manner, and have continued that development for over 20 years. And I would just say, again, we as responsible legislators, not only of Alaska, but the American political scene, we must address the issue of that foreign dependency growing on an annual rate. I think this resolution would help us in that manner. And I would urge the body to vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've just been informed that Cam Toohey, the Executive Director of Arctic Power, has called my staff and indicated that currently He's teetering on 51 senators in favor of opening ANWR. But he says it's a very, very delicate balance and that we should not address anything like a 90-10 split in our recommendation because he probably will end up losing some of these. Now, some of you may not know the Arctic Power has spent a tremendous amount of money and time working the hill, as it is called, and they have been diligent in their effort to try and get this open. To go against that tenuous agreement that he's got, I think, would be a real disservice to our whole effort. So I'd strongly recommend that we would leave the bill as it is. I think it's a good idea. They need support from us, knowing that we still want it open, but let's not address that split right now.
Mr. Majority Leader, any further debate on the adoption of HJR 11? Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll keep my remarks brief. I rise in support of this resolution, but from a slightly different perspective, I guess. You know, this is in my district, and this summer I had an opportunity to travel around to the communities that are most close to that are right in the heart of this debate. And in 1971, Congress passed a law they called the Alaska Land Claim Settlement Act. And part of all of that was so that the native communities could set up business entities with a land base to become economically viable. And here we are having this discussion where a community has land holdings right in this area and they cannot get to it. And so I think it's a classic example of the federal government in this case with one law and with all of the federal land holdings in the state are just butting up right against each other. And so I would urge people's support for this.
Thank you, Representative Jewell. Further debate on HGR 11. Representative Cajillo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that the legislative history we just created is basically rolling over on what we had as a right at statehood. I also want to point out that there still remain important environmental and subsistence concerns about opening this area, and that I think that the trade-off with the message that we're sending now simply isn't worth it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cajillo. Representative Buckford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just echo the words of the member from Sitka about consistency and ask that perhaps the chairman of the Oil and Gas Committee could take up, as we have on the past two occasions, a joint resolution on the 90-10 split. And this is an extraordinarily important resolution. I think it may be the most important resolution that will cross our desk this year. So I want to urge everybody here to reach down and get their green slip and become a co-sponsor on this. It is St. Patty's Day, isn't it? Right? And put your name on the top of this bill because I think it sends an excellent message to the Congress and that's where this is going.
Representative Biersendorf, we're pushing 102. I won't invoke it yet. Representative Biersendorf.
Mr. Speaker, I believe we're in third reading now. We moved along through three processes that I've been part of. This is the first time I spoke at this level. At the third level, there was some comments that were made here in relation to a former member of the House and how that person's view was in regards to ANWR. But I can tell you one thing about that individual. That individual has been consistent from the day that that person arrived in this chambers. And I respect that, as I respect all of your opinions, as long as we're consistent. Mr. Speaker, I am going to support this resolution. I think it's in the best interest of the state. There are some environmental questions and other questions dealing with subsistence that we have to answer. And there's also the question on what will be the state's share in relation with the of the royalty on that oil. But I support the resolution.
Thank you, Representative Griesendorf. Representative Osterman,
it seems to me that the discussion has continued to revolve around the 90-10, whereas in essence that's not really what we're discussing right now. We're discussing the resolution that is before us. The 90-10 split really is a moot issue. until they open ANWR. And all this does is open ANWR.
Thank you, Representative Osman. Representative Whitaker?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would echo the good representative behind me. We'll fight the 90-10 split battle at the appropriate time. We're not there yet. We will get there if we continue to be vigilant. If we pass a resolution of this nature, it is a step toward being vigilant, and we need to take that step. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Whitaker. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I will support the resolution. And one of the things I want to note, one of the reasons why I will support the resolution, among others, is that it does have a resolve in here on page 3 at line 8 that discusses protecting the environment. And so, Mr. Speaker, I think that we need to be, and I appreciate that resolve being in here, and I think that we need to continue to be mindful of the fact that there are different views of the nature of ANWR and how important it is to the nation. I think we have to remember that it is a national wildlife refuge, and that Alaska, while the land falls within the territorial borders of the state of Alaska, or the state border, that the that it is a piece of the national land. And I think it's perfectly appropriate for people of the rest of the United States to comment on the usage of that in the same way that we might want to comment on national lands held in other states. So I'm a little uncomfortable with the characterization of some of the opposition to this. I think that we have to be respectful of that opposition. And I certainly am respectful of it. And I think that there are serious concerns about environmental issues. I think that we will take them seriously. And it's in that spirit that I'll support the resolution. Thank you.
Representative Davies. Further debate on HJR 11. Representative Cherio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple of years back, I had the pleasure of participating in what was called the Targeted States Program. It was part of the Arctic Power effort to open up ANWR. I traveled back to D.C. and also traveled as part of a nonpartisan teams, or you know, one Democrat or Republican industry people that went to individual states to talk to editorial boards, labor groups, industry groups about ANWR and what ANWR meant to the state of Alaska and to the nation and to those individual states. I think the way the resolution reads right now, really focusing on the environmental aspect of ANWR is a proper statement to be making alone by itself right now, because the opposition that we encountered was by and large an environmental argument. And it was difficult enough to get people to really focus on the facts, how we have, in fact, developed the Prudhoe Bay area. And I don't think we want to have people, you know, sitting there as you're making your point, then put something in here that is another divisive issue that I think that that we need to deal with separately. So I think the way that the resolution is worded right now is the correct way. I would hope that there would be another piece of legislation dealing with the issue of the split. But I can tell you right now, having fought and traveled fighting this battle in the past, I think this is the proper wording for us to take action on right now. It was interesting. One of the states that I went to was Minnesota. I believe Senator Wellstone, new senator, actually I think he's in his second term now from that state. One of our ardent opponents on this issue. It was interesting though that they have a National Wildlife Refuge there in Minnesota, and there's a small road that goes through this this wildlife refuge, and it had become a bottleneck for traffic coming in and out of the major city there. And what they had decided to do to alleviate that problem is they were building an elevated superhighway right through this National Wildlife Refuge. They had obviously made the determination that they could do it, alleviate the traffic problems that they were having with minimal environmental impact to the National Wildlife Refuge. It's interesting that, that senator, I don't know if he was in office when that project was started, but I'm sure he's very supportive of that project and doing it in a way that doesn't harm the environment. But yet, when we can clearly demonstrate that we can take care of, you know, the National Wildlife Refuge that's in our state, have some development without adversely impacting the wildlife, you know, they're adamantly opposed. So again, I think it's proper that we really keep this resolution focused on that environmental aspect, and hopefully we are inching closer to success in the Congress. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Terrio. Are we ready for the question? Question B. Shall we adopt HJR 11, and shall that HJR 11 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
37 yeas, 2 nays.
And so, HJR 11 has passed the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's agenda? Reproduce. Please get back to order. Did we read? We did. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Joint Resolution Number 13 by Representatives Terrio, Davies, Whitaker, Mulder, Harris, relating to using oil spill settlement funds to create an endowment for the sciences at the University of Alaska. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the resolution, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 13, Hess, with a new title, attached to zero fiscal note, recommending due pass, Morgan, Coghill, Whitaker, Kimplin, Bryce, no recommendation, Green and Dyson. The report was signed by Coghill and Dyson co-chairs. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 13, Finance, with a new title, recommending due pass, Terrio, Mulder, Davies, Grusendorf, Foster, do not pass, Coring and Osterman, no recommendation, Bundy, Moses and Williams. The report was signed by Terrio and Mulder co-chairs. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute with a new title for House Joint Resolution 13 be adopted.
Without objection, we have adopted the Finance Committee substitute with a new title. Are there amendments?
I have no amendments on my desk.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 13 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for House Joint Resolution 13 Finance, relating to using oil spill settlement funds to create a long-term research and monitoring endowment.
Is there a debate? Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the members had looked through the different versions of the resolution, they would notice that the initial resolution actually asked that the EVOS Board of Trustees consider setting aside a portion of their expected reserve funding to establish an endowment at, and originally it said endowment, with the University of Alaska for ongoing research in the northern portion of the Gulf of Alaska. On the impacts and effects of the oil spill. About 3 weeks ago, the Board of Trustees actually did take action, and instead of setting aside the $100 million that I had originally requested, they actually did take action to set aside $115 million into a portion of sort of an endowment that will spin off an ongoing revenue stream to do research, the research that I had spoken to. However, they did not designate that the $115 million go specifically to the University of Alaska. I understand their concern that they wanted any kind of research projects to go through a competitive process, and while I certainly would have liked to have seen some or all of it steered specifically to our in-state university, I understand that a competitive process keeps our, not only our university sharp, but any grantee that wants to participate in that ongoing research. So the language in the resolution was changed, modified to support the action, the recent action of the EVOS Board of Trustees. In addition, it asks that the board consider, and it's just consider, it encourages them to perhaps establish some endowed chairs at the University of Alaska to oversee some of the research activities or instruction and public service activities that the EVOS board envisions taking place well into the future. Now, that, as I mentioned, just encourages them to do it. The EVOS Board of Trustees have a fiduciary responsibility to see that the trust funds are spent to get the biggest bang for the dollar that they can. They would be completely in control of how an endowed chair at the university system would be set up, what duties they would be tasked with, how the funds would be used. Again, that's at the complete control of the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees is six individuals. In order for them to take any action, they all have to agree. So any one individual can put a stop to action by that board. The last resolve asks Congress to take action in amending the federal legislation that puts restrictions on how the balance of the trustee funds can be invested. Right now, they are limited to specific U.S. treasuries, and it is estimated over the past couple of years by not being able to invest a little bit more aggressively, similar to what some of our retirement fund accounts and the permanent fund does, that they have lost out on an estimated $17 to $20 million worth of income. So if we believe that this ongoing research is valuable, and will be valuable to the state of Alaska, we want it to go on for, you know, hopefully for forever, but we want to be able to derive the largest or the biggest income stream that we can. And right now they are hampered in doing that by the limitations that is put on them by the federal government and how they can invest their money. So that is the three resolves. I know there has been some concern expressed over the amount of administrative charge that the university takes when they do enter into a research grant. In the past, the EVOS Board of Directors has also been concerned about that and has actually forced the university to reduce the administrative taking on grant funds. I'm sure that concern will be utmost in their mind should they actually enter into negotiations to endow specific chairs. I would envision that that perhaps we would get two or three chairs endowed. It takes about $2 million to endow a chair. That pays for the salary and some of the support of an individual, a research and/instructor at the university. So I'm thinking that at most, you know, we're looking at $5 to $10 million of the $115 million possibly going into endowed chairs at the university. They can also set it up so that the endowed chair lasts for 3 to 5 years. Then they can reevaluate whether they want to continue it or shift the focus and endow a different chair with a different focus. So again, it's in complete control of the EVOS Board of Trustees. And with that, I'll answer questions if there are any.
Thank you, Representative Cherio. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to rise in support of this resolution and encourage folks to vote for it and state my point of view as far as the support. And I point out that in the resolution, it discusses not just research, but teaching and applying the research. This encourages me because I realize this will be research that doesn't end up in some very esoteric small group discussion or moldering away on a shelf somewhere, but will be actually applied to the benefit of Alaskans and will be available to be used in classrooms on a variety of campuses across our state rather than in a limited area. So with that, I can support the issue.
Thank you, Representative Bundy. Representative Kevlin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this resolution. I think that this is a an excellent approach for the legislature to be taken. Mr. Speaker, we are, as most folks on this floor know, we're moving very rapidly into the information age. and where knowledge is a key component of value, and that that value creates wealth for communities, creates wealth for the state. This one of the things about Alaska is that we do not have a very strong and diversified private sector in our state. Most other states, when you look at their university systems, they do have the private sector making contributions to the university to endow chairs. An example that I'm familiar with is in the state of Delaware. The DuPont Corporation and a number of other corporations in that state have made investments in their university system, particularly in chemical engineering, and they are one of the top 10 chemical engineering research and development institutions in America and, of course, in the world. One of the weaknesses we have as a state is that we don't have those strong corporations here providing that type of finances. That's one of the reasons why we have to be innovative. We have to be looking at ways to strengthen our asset base in terms of knowledge infrastructure. The use of these funds is an excellent approach. I think the investment that is made in this endowed chairs will produce significant returns to the state of Alaska. I think it will be certainly, if you take a long-term view,
would the House please come up, please? Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we revert back to introduction of guests for two shakes?
Without objection, we're under introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hate to do this to revert back in the middle of the debate, but I do have some folks that have been coming in and out that I've been trying to get introduced. They're down from UAF, but they work with the music department as well as other various arts organizations in the interior. Would the body please help me welcome Mr. Dr. Ted DeCorso, who is chair of the music department and also a recipient of the Governor's Arts Award. Dr. Kathleen Butler Hopkins, who is a professor of upper strings, as opposed to lower strings, I guess. Bad joke. Also, Dr. Edward Zobrikant, who is professor of piano, and Anna Zobrikant, his wife, who is also on the executive board of the Fairbanks Symphony. I believe that they had a little performance last night and have been down spreading goodwill and arts through the state. So would the body please help me welcome them.
Are there any other guests for introduction? Seeing none, we'll return to the calendar. Is there any other discussion on committee substitute for HGR 13? Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, certainly I support this resolution, and I want to bring up another thought as far as research goes. For the last 3 or 4 years, possibly as long as 5 years, we have seen a decline in our fisheries in Alaska, and if any of you saw the articles yesterday with 9 species of salmon in Washington State being declared an endangered species, we don't want that ever to occur in Alaska, and yet we are seeing compounded problems with our fisheries industry throughout the state of Alaska. And I think having the ability to take this opportunity for money and direct it to the university and ask them to make this a priority research project will be a benefit to all of Alaska.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, I rise in strong support of the resolution and want to express my appreciation to the prime sponsor for bringing it forward and also being responsive to the changing scene here as things have evolved. I think the council is also appreciative of having this. I think they welcome our support for their actions and our guidance. I also want to speak to the. I think all three resolves are very well taken. I believe they're all important issues, but I want to speak specifically to two issues. That one that relates to the importance of long-term research, and that's one of the whereases on page 2 at lines 12 through 16 speaks to that issue specifically. And I want to just underscore that many of the things that happened in Prince William Sound. We didn't have the ability to really understand them or to predict what the effects would be, in part because we didn't have the long-term baseline of information in place at that time that we needed to be able to even predict what the effects of the spill would be. And that's often a circumstance in science that oftentimes to really understand something, we need a long baseline of information. It's very difficult to justify that research often when you don't. Research, after all, is what we're doing when we don't know what we're doing, and so it's difficult to get money to support that. It's with this kind of a situation, it becomes abundantly clear why that's important, and to focus this particular money on the problems in that particular region of the state are obvious in their importance. But I think the former speaker from Homer brings up a very good point, which is that it spins off into areas of research that are fundamentally important to the future of the state of Alaska, and that's a basic understanding of what our fisheries are all about. When we had the crash of the Chum on the Yukon system a few years ago, I called up the Department of Fish and Game and I said, well, what's going on? And they said, well, and as a matter of fact, we really don't know. And I said, well, why is that? And that's because we haven't devoted the resources necessary to really understand that particular fishery. Of all the fisheries in the state of Alaska, it's probably the one that we've had put the least priority on. And so that's an example of a place where when things begin to develop that are important to both our commercial, our subsistence, our personal use fisheries, if we don't have the long-term research in place, when things begin to go awry, we really don't even know where to turn without this kind of long-term research. So it's fundamentally important, and I really think I want to underscore that point. The second point I want to make is with respect to the endowed chairs. I think that that's an extremely important idea, and for a variety of reasons. One is that it will focus, as the former speaker from Homer indicated, a whole effort at the university on this particular problem. So in focusing that, it will bring in other resources to bear on this particular issue. Also, a chair that's endowed. When you have a professor that's in that position, they're in a very good position to leverage a lot of federal research money and to bring in money that supports graduate students, that will do research, that will further leverage the effort. And so the multiplying effect of putting a small amount of money, say $2 million aside, you might actually bring in more than that $2 million on an annual basis to the state of Alaska to work on this problem as a result of that investment. Through this leveraging effect of a professor having the time to focus exclusively on the issue of directing this area of research, bringing graduate students, bringing federal money together. So it's an extremely important idea. It can have paid benefits both in terms of the financial issues for the state of Alaska, but the fundamental research and the graduate student education and instruction and getting information out in the public sector that the representative in front of me also mentioned. So for those reasons, I really want to say that we want to continue to talk to the EBOS Council about the importance of those endowed chairs. I think that it's easy to underestimate how effective they could be.
Representative Davies. Representative Hudson, and then
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to also rise and indicate my very strong support for this resolution. And Mr. Speaker, all we have to take a look at is over the last 2 years, we put almost $50 million into the Bristol Bay fisheries disaster. And it seems to me as though prevention through knowledge and through good scientific discernment of what's going on out there is really how we'll ultimately understand those kind of things and perhaps preclude them from happening. And so I believe this is a very good approach, and I'd like to put my 2 cents worth in.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Bogan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise with a mixed bag of logic on this bill. I support the concept of maybe having less money spent to maybe mitigate probably the biggest tie-up of private property in the history of the state since Anelka. The EVOS organization is probably run by people that not only wear green for because of St. Patty's Day, so in that area, I'm happy about it. I mean, I think the land that they buy far exceeds maybe the value of what the impact on the resource, and it's just simply a lockup. The other side of that story is that the biggest abuser of my opinion, and it's probably going to make some people angry here, but the timber issues are the private landholders. I mean, they clear cut everything and possibly harm the fish. So I guess I'm going to be supportive because it might take a little bit of a little bit less land that they can buy and tie up, because there's a tremendous amount of it going on right now. And I'll be reluctantly voting yes.
Are we ready for the question? Question being, Shell, CS Committee Substitute for HGR 13 Finance, passed the House. Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Any member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk announce the roll?
36 yeas, 2 nays.
And so, Committee Substitute for HGR 13 has passed the House. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
There's citations on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
No objection. The citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us to unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the following representatives be excused from the call of the House for following times. Representative Cox from 7:15 a.m. March 20 until 9:20 p.m. Plain Time March 22nd. Representative Murkowski from 7:02 p.m. March 22nd until 9:30 p.m. Plain Time March 23rd. Representative Murkowski from 7 a.m. April 15th to 6:41 p.m. Plain Time April 15th, and I hope that's not a tax issue. Representative Porter from 2 p.m. March 31st until 2 p.m. Plain Time April 6th. Mr. Speaker, there are no other excused absences.
No objection. Those members will be shown as excused during the times and dates as indicated by the Majority Leader. Brings us to committee announcements. Are there committee announcements? General announcements. I'm sorry, Representative Dyson.
Yeah. Thank you. House Hess will be canceled tomorrow, 3 to 5. Thank you.
Yes, committee is canceled for tomorrow. Any other general announcements? Representative Berkowitz?
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There will not be a minority caucus following session.
Thank you, Representative Berkowitz. Mr. Majority Leader.
After that, I rise somewhat chagrined, but Mr. Speaker, there will be a majority caucus at 6 p.m. tonight.
Majority caucus at 6 p.m. this evening? Are there any other announcements? Special orders?
Speaker, I ask permission to speak to the body about the Irish and potatoes.
Without objection.
Thank you. I have been speaking to the body for the past couple of years about a project that I have been supporting with regard to the growing and certification of a potato crop in the state of Alaska. And I know Jennifer Macbeth has been making the rounds in the building and maybe met with some of you this morning even about the efforts that that she has undertaken and the success that they have been having. I just wanted to sort of give a little bit of an update. Back in 1996, when we first started on this project, we sold just in hundreds of pounds, 600 pounds of sea potatoes in a trial run to Taiwan and 39,000 pounds of sea potatoes in a special project to China. Now in the year 2000, they are anticipating we may be up to, in sea potatoes, 230,000 pounds. Also, we're branching into table stock of possibly up to 828,000 pounds to possibly 1.3 million. And in addition, we now have interest in cabbages and carrots. So we are having some success for the expenditures that we have been making. It's, I think, important to point out that these Pacific Rim countries are only interested in the importation of this these farm products or produce if we can certify to a fairly high degree that they are virus-free or disease-free. And I think it's interesting to, appropriate for me to bring this up today as we're celebrating the Day of the Irish here. The diseases that we are trying to keep out of the state of Alaska and that we have to certify that our produce is basically free from are the very diseases that the Irish potato blight was all about. Viral ring rot, late blight, things of that nature that not only destroy the plants, but when you take the produce and put it into storage, it just basically disintegrates and becomes inedible. I think that here in the state of Alaska, it's a curse, our geographic isolation and our cold climate, but when it comes to this type of thing, it's somewhat of a blessing. We are removed from other areas of the nation that produce these products where they have a high incidence of these diseases. And basically, in order to get their crops through the growing season and to market, they have to douse them with fungicides and different herbicides. And it's to the point that I would suggest that if you are eating a potato that was grown outside the state of Alaska, you seriously consider just eating the white part and passing on the peel, because they are sprayed multiple times during the growing season to keep the diseases at bay. That is a problem that we don't have a real problem with here in the state of Alaska, but there is some danger. Late blight was discovered in the Mat Valley last year. It can spread very easily, and without adequate resources to do the testing, which is not just visually looking over in the field. You have to take leaf cuttings and actually take them back to the laboratory to do the testing. Without that adequate testing, the diseases could spread throughout the state of Alaska, and basically the one advantage that we do have will be lost forever. And that's what we're trying to support with the research money that has been granted in the past couple of years. Thank you.
Representative Terrio. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I request permission to speak on two good public meetings regarding Alaska's future.
Without objection.
Last Saturday, the Kenai Peninsula delegation from this body was in Kenai to host an Alaska Economic Forum planning for the future. We patterned this forum after the economic development meeting that we had here in early February. This forum was hosted not only by the legislature, but the governor's office, the AML, the Alaska Fiscal Policy, and the Alaska Municipal League. We took the testimony all morning from the experts, and in the afternoon we broke into subsections, small working groups of all the members there. This was the idea, and the meeting was also hosted by the Kenai Peninsula Bureau, the City of Kenai, and the City of Sagatna. The idea from the Mayor's Conference and AML was to formulate a program that can be taken to all the communities to talk to communities about what the fiscal gap really means today and how do we fill it. When we broke into the working groups in the afternoon, the result of the outcome of how they would fill the gap was very interesting, and I'd just like to share with you that 7 of the 8 working groups came up with the solution, use the excess earnings reserve account and put a cap on the dividend. And that cap was anywhere between $1,000 and $1,250. The meeting was very, very productive. We'll have a full report on it, and I believe that it was so successful that AML and the Mayor's Conference will be looking at taking it throughout the communities. The other meeting that I just attended and gave a keynote address yesterday was to the Alaskans Convention. The Alaskans Convention, it is an organization made up of Alaskans all over the country, and they get together for 1 week a year just to reminisce about Alaska, but to discuss Alaska's issues and to see if they need to be doing something more to affect where we're going in Alaska. And certainly they are very, very interested in the future of Alaska. They asked me to speak about Alaska's future. One of the things, and from that body of people, which was well over 500 people, it was a big convention, they asked that I bring greetings from all of them to this body, but they were very, very sincere about what we were doing with Alaska's economy,
what we were going to do about subsistence. They do not want the federal government in here to take over. And also, they don't want any income taxes. Other than that, they were very supportive of many of the things that we're doing and talking about, and it was a good meeting.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. Representative Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request permission to speak about the last Great Lace.
Without objection.
With great excitement, Mr. Speaker, the champion made it to Front Street and through the arch. Didn't get there yesterday, but he got there early this morning. And he wore bib number 16. It's Doug Swainley from Montana. This is his second win. And he crossed the finish line in 9 days, 14 hours, 31 minutes, and 7 seconds, compared to a time in 95 when he took the championship as well. That year, he was 12 hours longer in 99. He had a record pace in 95, though, which he finished in 9 days, 2 hours, and 43 minutes. And I believe for the second runner-up, it's Big Lake Musher Martin Boozer, who is a three-time champ, but he should be known by now, but I believe there's about a 10-hour difference between Swingley and Boozer. And we have Vern Halter, who's in third place. Oh, and I'd like to say, too, that Doug Swingley crossed the finish line with 11 dogs, and they do start off with 16, and that is the limit. So he had to let 5 go along the way. And Vern Halter has also had about 12 dogs, which is quite impressive. And Rick Swenson is in fourth place, Charlie Golden in fifth, Paul Gephardt is in sixth place, John Baker is in seventh, Jeff King in eighth, and in ninth place is Steve Engholm, and Ed Eaton wraps up to the number 10 spot. And Mr. Speaker, from all the teams that have started, there were 8 scratches so far, and the weather seems to be pretty good. All the mushers are filing into White Mountain, and it's about 77 miles to Nome from there. And they do have to go over a series of mountains that are kind of like a roller coaster. I remember one year when I left White Mountain, I was a half hour behind one team, and that team was Herbie Marepek's son-in-law from Shaktulik, and he was also known as the Cannonball. And he left a half hour before me, and I left right on time. But as I was going over the roller coaster ride, I kept looking for him, Mr. Speaker, but I didn't see him. And once you get down off of those mountains, you hit the coast, and it's a straight shot over to safety, and they even have mileposts set up so you can count down your mileage before you get to safety. And Mr. Speaker, it's 22 miles from safety, so it's a mad dash, and anything can happen with these top 20 mushers, and the money pays up to the top 20, so I'm sure they're going to be working hard to try to get into earning some money on that stretch. And I will continue to give an update until we get the Red Lantern across the arch there in Maine. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Massey. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to rise to also support the representative of District 33 and his support for the potato project, and just to add one addendum to that, which is that I heard on the news this morning that there's going to be apparently some request to try to support the Republic of Korea with some transfer of potato, both seed, I presume both seed and table stock, and so I would hope that we. We think that we are well positioned to take advantage of that, and that we ought to move quickly on that one. Thank you.
Representative Osterman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request permission to speak on potatoes also.
Without objection.
Thank you. I would like to expand that conversation just a little bit. We're constantly discussing here how much of a budget we have to have and where we should cut to make the budget that we need. The conversation we don't have is what it takes to run a state, and what the infrastructure of a state needs to be able to have a taxable infrastructure to run the state with. You can cut yourself to poorhouse as well as cut yourself to savings. If you do not invest in the economics of the state, you will never have the economics that you need to survive with to make the state the grand state that it is. The potato crops in the Mat-Su Valley and up through Fairbanks are just a small example of how we can invest and then reap the benefits of that. But if we don't invest, we'll never reap the benefits. So I encourage everybody to consider these types of projects when we have discussions on them and when they come before you.
Thank you, Representative Osterman. Representative Logan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission the body to speak on inflammatory political gossip columns.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I've been troubled the past few days over a column that was recently put in the state's largest newspaper by a particular writer that impugned the reputation of a couple of men that I have a great deal of respect for. And I'd like to talk a little bit about some actions that I know I've personally taken in legislation to help people. And I guess there was an analogy that one of the members of this body used about tying shoelaces, and I thought it was, you know, a good analogy. I didn't take offense to it. I didn't think it was racist in any way, shape, or form. And I'd like to talk about some of those constructive ways that we can help people that are dependent on a particular subsidy to become more independent. And I don't think that's a negative thing at all. For example, I've had two pieces of legislation that I passed that a couple of years ago we wrote the guide laws to eliminate the testing for assistant guides, and with a specific ability and a specific intent to help rural Alaskans, especially rural Alaskans that can't read and write and pass a test, to become assistant guides. That to me is taking off the Velcro and tying the shoelaces, helping them tie the shoelaces. We have a legislation that we passed a couple of years ago to help with the Power Cost Equalization Project. I was told that as of today, the regulations were supposed to be ready to have that program in place to allow for shallow coal bed leasing. I think the remarks of the gentleman that I heard were in that spirit, and you know, I just think it's really regrettable that the press and some of the members in this body are already digressing to playing the racist card. And you know, Mr. Speaker, I grew up. My mother was born in Florida, and in Tallahassee. My grandfather was a dean at the university there, and she grew up with the very real horrors of racism and seeing it firsthand in the Deep South, and taught me that. And I won't go into the description of some of the things that I learned as a child. And I'm proud to say that I don't know a derogatory word for Native. It doesn't exist in my vocabulary. And I'd like to say, I don't want to hear it. I don't want anyone to tell me if there is one. I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of the fact that I've taught my children that. And I would just urge the members here, let's not go there. And I would urge the press, all I have to say about that one reporter, sometimes the biggest bigots are the ones that are calling other people the same. Thank you.
Representative Dyson.
Thank you. Permission to speak on the same subject?
Without objection?
Thank you. I also took exception to some things that appeared in Alaska's largest daily newspaper. And it had to do with accusing a good and respected friend of mine of having a tantrum on the floor here. I felt that that was inappropriate. I realized that because of my advanced years and being hard of hearing and dull of spirit, that I sometimes miss things, but if there was a tantrum here, I missed it. And I would suggest that whoever made that observation wasn't watching and hearing what I watched and heard. I think due to your leadership and your predecessor in that seat and the spirit that's been going on here, at least since I've been here, there's been quite a bit of cooperation and fairly admirable decorum. And I am proud of how we generally conduct our business and specifically how the minority leader has been conducting himself. And I take serious exception to the characterizations that appeared in that column. I think they were out of order and not in the finest tradition of the journalism profession. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. Any other special orders? Representative Berkowitz.
Permission to say thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Permission granted.
Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Permission body to speak on Tisblowney and Tisblowney.
Without objection.
Well, I was very impressed by the dialogue that we had from the representative from District 33. However, I was really disappointed to find that our potato crop is going to seed. But I was also enlightened by the fact that he gave us some legal advice, and I think we should all adhere to that, when he said that when litigating potato eating, we should pass on appeal.
No. That's what he said.
On the Tisblowney, Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the House stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, March 19th.
Thank you so much, Cornelia Garage.